I'm really glad to be here. And I have to say that I was a little surprised to get the invitation to come here, because I moved to Stanford away from the National Academies in January to take a position there at, as I said, at the Center for International Security and Cooperation, where my brief is mostly national security issues, where I come to it from the perspective of thinking about cyber threats and so on, and cyber and policy. And so I then, when I guess Apu called me or you know, contacted me and said, are you interested in talking? I sort of said, what do I have to offer? Well, I've done several studies at the National Academies on healthcare information technology, so I know a little bit about that. And so, but I have to say, I come to this stuff from the perspective of a national security analyst, which has a, you know, a certain mindset, you know, to it. It's different, but because I've done work in health information technologies, I am familiar more or less with the culture both of healthcare and of the people who work the information technology side of the house there. So that's why I'm, I thought I would focus on that and see if there was anything that I could bring to the table. And so what I wanted to talk about, actually just really to start a conversation on this, because what I want to bring up are things that I think have not really seriously been addressed in health, in the security dimension of health information technology. And I'm going to start with things that everybody knows about, and then other things which most other people don't know about, but this audience will know well, and then stuff that I think maybe you haven't thought about all that much. So that's sort of the presentation's order. So I'm going to start with something which everybody knows well, which is this question of data breaches, right? You may know that there is a site that HHS runs, I think it's in the beta privacy site, about which lists all the breaches above 500 people, okay? And it's a long list. It starts, the list starts in 2009. Obviously, the problem didn't start in 2009 with the passage of high tech, and so this I downloaded this. This is all on the site. I downloaded this a couple of days ago when I was preparing for this talk. These are these are the first five breaches in order of size. Okay, and then the next one is the next five. So I'm going to show 10 of them. And what I want you to do, it's hard, sort of hard to flip back and forth between these slides. They didn't fit all onto one. But the most interesting thing is this second from the right column, the type of incident, where the website lists the type of incident that that was responsible for this. And you know, it's just a couple of words, but doing so, you know, a bit of online searching, you can find out what the different you can find out more than what's on these sites. And they are mostly, of course, electronic, and because that's the only real way to steal stuff, to lose stuff in large quantities. Otherwise, you have to lose truckloads of it, of paper. And there's hacking incidents, and there's loss of backup tapes, and there's theft, which is really another form of this electronic theft in this particular case at Community Health Systems. For some reason I don't understand, it's listed as theft. And so all of these are heavily IT, heavily IT related, right? And so there's, and there's a lot of, and I haven't, there's one that I know of, the Primera breach, which had 11 million people. That isn't even up on the site yet. So there's a bunch of things out there that are that are out there, and we all know about this stuff. I'm just doing this by way of reminder, okay? And so what do people worry about in this? Okay, they worry about identity theft, loss of credit. So the reason that you know this is the response, right? These guys who are breached, they say to the possible victims, we're going to give you credit monitoring. We're going to give you identity theft protection, that kind of thing. Fraud resolution, credit restoration to affected individuals. Okay, and they say, here's a service. If any of you ever tried to use these services, I have before for a non-IT related issue. My sweetie at the time disposed of a stack of financial records about yay thick in the trash. I had a few words with her about that. So I had to assume that I was compromised because of that. So I've had to use these services. They're a real pain to use, right? You really don't want to use them. You by the response of the institution, you'd say that the problem is, you'd think the problem is identity theft. And there are the other kinds of harms, other than bad credit and so on, are things like that information in principle, if you mine it, could be used to blackmail people, individual losses of privacy, right? So that you can imagine, for example, teenage girls who are pregnant, who don't want their parents to know. We know about an incident like this, right, already. Where this woman, not through a data breach, but she started getting ads for pregnant women, and so at her home, and her ads targeted towards pregnant women, Pampers and other baby stuff, and her family didn't know, and that caused quite a scene there. Medical ID theft is a big deal in all of this. It's to fraudulently obtain medical services. To some extent, the passage of the Affordable Care Act changes some of the calculus there, but doesn't change all of it. So what are some of the issues there? There's, of course, the credit issue, and you can the thief can obtain medical services in the victim's name. Victims and the victim's policy are responsible. It's not just services, of course, it's also goods, expensive goods that you can resell on the market. Drugs, wheelchairs, that kind of thing. Okay, and you can get you can generate fraudulent reimbursement claims for that. Loss of health coverage, right? If you can max out certain limits, and that may impede your ability to get health care. For me, the most terrifying thing about that is that there might wind up in my medical record, medical information of someone else who has obtained health services under my name. So you could imagine all kinds of things in there. There could be mental health diagnoses in there, drug addiction diagnoses, sexually transmitted diseases, those kinds of issues, which could be embarrassing, hard to explain, et cetera, et cetera. Especially if, for example, like I once had, no longer, a security clearance, right? I have to worry about those sorts of things. I'll get to the national security dimension of this is interesting, which I'll get to later a lot more. Allergies to meds, right? Somebody has an allergy to a medication that I am allergic, that I'm not allergic to, there's a mistaken indication of allergy in my file that could change the medical treatment that I get. From Optimal. There's improper treatment for victims. There's also ramifications to the family. So there was one instance in which a woman gave birth under medical ID theft, gave birth to a child, a baby, an infant that tested positive for drug addiction. And as a result of that, Child Protective Services got involved and tried to take away the real mother's four children. Okay, you can imagine that's a mess. It ultimately worked out, but it was a mess for a while. Okay, you can imagine provider claims. Providers being subject to malpractice. Why? Because they didn't exercise proper care in the maintenance of privacy of your health records. So this is something that all care providers are committed to provide now, the privacy of your records, and perhaps you can be sued for under malpractice statutes. Obviously, there's a risk to the healthcare organization, right? What's going to happen to the organization when it realizes that it's lost 10 million records? Is anybody going to complain, think worse of them, either from a service provider point of view, is the stock price going to take a hit, and so on? And you could easily imagine risks of corporate blackmail in this. So the idea here is that let's say I obtain all this information, and if I want to ensure myself a continuing revenue stream, I could say to this, to a corporation whose information, out of which I've sucked out all this information, you know, I'm not going to announce it. I'm not going to publicize this information if you give me a certain payment. And then when it comes in, then I can, and I don't publicize it, then I can extract more rent out of them. I can extract another fee from them the next month for not revealing it. And so and there's some level at which I can make this a continuing expense. If I set the amount low enough so that it doesn't raise too many questions, it's a quiet payment and so on. There are all kinds of ways of doing this. And would we ever know that this is happening? That might be hard. Okay. So there was a HIMSS survey in 2014. Which surveyed about 300 health IT executives, most of which worked for hospitals or healthcare systems. So this is an interesting figure to me. 65% of them experienced significant data security incident in the past year. On the other hand, then this is an interesting point here, that 62% said these breaches had limited impact on patient care or on IT operations. That's an interesting statistic, right? You have incidents that happen, so that means that it's at least a third of these guys, right? There's significant incident doesn't affect their IT operations very much, and certainly it's just disclosure of data. It doesn't affect patient care very much. You can still provide patient care, so that's interesting. What were their security concerns, as identified in the survey? Medical ID theft, deliberate insider breaches, guys snooping around, staff and so on, snooping around for a celebrity, snooping or for relatives or what have you, and financial identity theft. Okay. These are the security concerns. So that's an interesting, that's interesting. I'll come back to that later as well. Okay. And of course, the organization that sponsored this person, points out that this is a the financial value of these data being compromised are the primary concern that's indicated here. Okay. So takeaways. So there is concern about cybersecurity. Main threat is data breaches. And the mitigation, as we pointed out earlier, the mitigation of the impact is misaligned with the concerns of industry. Focus on financial identity theft versus problems of greater concern, snooping insiders and the like. And so this led me to ask a question. When I was thinking about what I might say here, this led me to ask the question, what else should we be worrying about? And there's a whole panoply of things to be worried about. So all of these issues involve breaches of confidentiality, right? That there's somehow there's this data that's out there, and the data is the primary focus, and it's supposed to be secret in the sense that unauthorized people shouldn't get at it. But of course, computer security people know that that's only one breaching confidentiality, compromising confidentiality is only one way of dealing with the one way that you can mess with a computer. There are other ways too. So I want to talk about the I and the A, the integrity and the availability side of the house. And I'm presuming everybody knows about those things. And so it's interesting from my perspective to talk about medical devices and infrastructure and finally the EHR systems. On medical devices, this is the stuff that this is your bread and butter, right? So I'm not gonna go through. I'm gonna assume that you know most of this. I was just a very quick review. I'm not pretending here to tell you anything that you don't already know. Okay, here, this is the stuff that Kevin Fu has done.
Hi,
Kevin. I was wondering if you were going to be here. Of course you are. This stuff is, you know, there's going to be a session on it later. And you've seen all of this stuff, right? The medical devices are unauthenticated, they're unprotected, they have hard-coded credentials. You have these devices that actually diddle with your body. The defibrillators, the insulin pumps, and so on. And you can change various operating parameters, dosage, strength of shocks, for example, dosage of insulin that you give out, when you give these, or not giving them at all, how and when they offer alerts because they have sensors in them, and so on. Okay, so there's moving on, there's also an extensive IT-based hospital infrastructure. Okay? This is not implanted medical devices. These are not things that actually affect my body per se, but sort of in an indirect way they do. They're not implanted into me. I've seen, in monitoring the literature, I have seen less on this stuff. The focus has been, I think understandably, on things that you implant into your bodies, things that are hard to get at. There's all kinds of other stuff in a hospital, in a large healthcare organization that you have to worry about. Consider something as simple as refrigerated storage, right? You go into any hospital, there's lots of refrigerators around, okay? And they store samples, right? They store drugs. And you have to have temperature controls. I mean, that's why you need the refrigeration. And the temperature controls are all computer-based, and they're all connected, well, not all, of course, but some of them are connected to the internet. Right, and you set, you know, what are the upper and lower allowable temperature settings, and you can shut the thing off, and they page you if they page an attendant in case there's some problem that needs human attention, and so on, and all of that is manipulable remotely, right? In principle, that's just medical storage. That's just one aspect of that, and you can certainly imagine that getting into those systems is a is difficult, right? Not that it's difficult. It causes many difficult problems. You can easily imagine that just that one aspect of a hospital. HVAC systems in a hospital. HVAC systems in a hospital are important. They provide clean air. They provide positive overpressure in certain rooms and in clean rooms and so on. Temperature, they control temperature everywhere. That's also computer controlled. Okay. MRI scanners, CT scanners, right? They deal with imaging. They generate digital data that, in principle, you can manipulate. That a program can go inside and manipulate. You can create false images, or you're not going to create a whole new image, but you're going to take an existing image and modify it in certain places, or you could. Okay. Fetal monitoring, right? These are, you know, alarms are set to go off in different places, when certain things happen. You can disable the alarms. You can change the settings at which some alarm is issued. You can slow the thing down because of a denial of service kind of an attack or a phenomenon where the underlying system runs so slowly that you miss events, and so on. Hospitals, I want to consider the EHR systems, the online medical records to which, you know, that all of our information is going to go into. Right. It's all going to go into it. The medical world is going to electronic medical records. We all know this. Everybody's going to depend on them. So imagine what happens if you have a denial of service. where you can't get access to the records. So there are two things. One, you obviously slow it down. You slow down the provision of care. And that's obviously true. So that's not a good thing. The second thing is that we all know that when people start depending on systems, they forget how to do things manually. Okay? So you're now you're not just slowing it down, now you're incurring more risk of more errors and so on because people have forgotten how to do their stuff without a computer going on. Okay. So what can you do about the integrity issue? You can alter correct medical information that's in my record. Okay, that leads to bad diagnoses. Okay. As Paul pointed out before, you could insert false or erroneous information into a record. I can cause bad orders to be given, so I can change dosages of medications, indicate allergies to medication that aren't there, so I get a lot less optimal treatment, and take away indications of allergy, so I get a medication that I'm allergic to, and so on. All bad things. I can change medical orders. All kinds of bad things in principle can happen here. Okay. So, to review this, I mean, think about there are the usual threat to health information systems these days is exploitation. That is, cyber attack reveals private health information of some celebrity, or you know, breach reveals 10,000 people's medical information, or something like that. Okay, those are what you hear about. And the usual bad guys, well, you've heard about it on individual cases, the paparazzi there, celebrity chasers. Criminals, yes, a lot of criminals are active in this space. They do all kinds of things with these records. Nation states are apparently getting into the business of getting at medical records too. Right? Community health was said anyway. No, we're not sure how they hired Mandiant to figure this out. Said that they had been hacked by China. Healthcare systems are being probed by parties like China that are going after IP, intellectual property, and they come across other interesting Trojan data and say, oh, what the hell, let's just take that too. Maybe we can do something with it later. Okay. And certainly if I were an intelligence guy doing, you know, searching for this stuff, that's what I would do. Okay. Why not? It's free to take. No storage costs? Why not? And insurance companies, you know, are insurance companies involved in this? I don't think so. But, you know, people, every now and then you hear about this. It's sort of in a no documented case that I've heard of where an insurance company has done this. Of course, it's illegal for an insurance company to do this. They get their data, their amounts of data legally, right? They don't need to steal the data. But this is the usual kind of threat. And so what I want to do here is to consider a hostile operation that's genuinely an attack. Yeah?
I'm sorry, but I suggest one other thing that you're watching here. How many of you are older than
exactly right, and that you're presaging what I was going to say.
I'm sorry.
So, but that's correct. Okay, that's exactly right. Imagine a real attack. Okay, the possibilities of a real attack where you can either deny access or alter or insert data into medical records and the like. Okay. It clearly harms the provision of care, and was just pointed out, you can also do all sorts of other auxiliary things by publicizing this sort of stuff. And then imagine also the possibility of compromising the medical records of a city, the EMR systems in a city, for example, that has just been the victim of a catastrophic physical attack, an attack on a stadium, a sports event, where you'll have a flood of people coming in, all of a sudden needing to have medical care. Okay. The kinds of chaos here, the National Academies did a study in 2002, which also pointed this out, that the real threats from cyber in terms of terrorist threats are from cyber events coordinated with physical events, where the cyber is a force multiplier for the bad guy, can amplify the effects of a physical attack. And of course, you've seen this, you know, targeting the responders, that kind of thing. That happens in terrorist events all the time. Okay. Also, I want you to consider the following possibility. Not a mass attack that goes after EMR systems, for example, on a large scale, where, you know, 10 million people get compromised necessarily, but where 100 people's records get compromised, a small attack, and then this is publicized. Okay? It's publicized by somebody who intentionally creates fear in the population that their medical records are not useful. What happens in this situation, right? So, you know, we remember the Pentium FDiv bug of many years ago, where it didn't quite add certain things properly and so on. That particular error would have happened very, 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 very rarely. And yet there was still a demand, a huge demand, and Intel took a big hit replacing the chips that were compromised, because of this very, very, very unlikely error. And why? Because people didn't have confidence anymore. Right? So what I'm asking you to do here is consider the possibility of not an attack on the healthcare system per se, but an attack on public confidence. Right? So imagine what happens when people who are sick are afraid to get healthcare because their information is compromised. How do they feel? What do they, yeah. That's true, and they can, that's right, and they can do a that's right, and they can do a diagnosis right there, and not rely on your record at all. That's absolutely right. Okay, but I can tell you that going in, if I were worried about the integrity of my health care, I would certainly think twice about making any medical decisions based on records that were information that was in my healthcare record. Okay. I would worry about that. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't go in necessarily, but I would worry about that. Okay. And remember, the scenario that you point out is an informed one, right? You think it's not any different, and you're right, it isn't. But I'm not sure how the vast majority of people will feel about that. In any case, you can also imagine providers being worried about relying on medical records. It's part of the point that you're making, that are possibly tainted. Probably still accurate. Probably more accurate than my memory. But you can still imagine them worrying about this. Okay. What are some of the possible adversaries in this? Okay. Who might do this stuff? Okay. Well, there's individuals. There are obviously those seeking to harm individual patients. If I were a bad guy hacker wanting to use medical records, there are certainly people that you could imagine going. I might want to go after somebody to take personal revenge because I didn't like them. How about for cause? That is, for some political cause. Oh, imagine just for the hell of it, somebody getting, diddling with Donald Trump's records, medical records. That's an interesting scenario. No, I'm not advocating any of this. I hope you understand this, right? I'm not advocating that we do any of this stuff. But this is the kind of thing you might want you have to think about. Right? Going after somebody that you don't like, not because there's a personal animus there, but because they're a prominent supporter of a cause that you really hate. You can imagine people doing this. Okay? Those seeking to harm healthcare providers. Okay? I don't like my doctor. He did me wrong, so I diddle with somebody's medical records in such a way that causes him to make a misdiagnosis, and then I restore the records to their original state. So the information on which he relies to make a medical decision is bad. He makes the wrong medical decision, and then when he goes back to the record, there's nothing else there. There's no evidence that that's what happened. Who's going to be believed under those circumstances? Right? Are people going to trust the record which says, what are you talking about? Or the doctor says, but it was there before. You can change you can change providers of record. I should have gotten credit for doing that operation. He shouldn't have. I want the money. Patients themselves. There's actually one case here in which a patient was in an emergency, or a drug addict, was in an emergency room, had, you know, got pain meds because of a broken leg or whatever it was. I don't remember the details of that. Hacked into the medical system that was controlling his pump and increased the dose of painkillers that he was getting because he was addicted to them. Patients themselves are adversaries in this. You can imagine, again, this is harder to imagine here, but at least in, you know, potentially possible, competitor organizations. One organization trying to ruin the reputation of another, but for various competitive reasons. Terrorist groups. You can imagine terrorist groups operating in this way. And you can imagine adversary nation states going down this path, where they have the resources to do this. They have money, time, hacker talent. And I guarantee you, if you imagine agency scale, national government agency resources for information, you know, for penetrating security against an EMR system in a hospital, no contest. Right? No contest at all. Why would they do that? So here what I want to do is consider an attack, for example, against the DoD healthcare system, which, as you probably know, is one, all electronic, and two, unclassified. You can cause chaos in the military system, military medical system. It also serves, by the way, military families. And individual soldiers may, you know, certainly care about their own health status, but they really care about the health status of their spouses and kids. You start diddling with that. That starts to really start impacting morale and readiness. That can become really serious. Okay? You start creating concerns about what's going on at home. Okay? Because you reduce their efficiency. They worry about this now. They spend time trying to contact, make, you know, they have to sort things out. You can imagine all kinds of messes in that. Loss of confidence in DoD medical records, loss of confidence in the US military. You can imagine a congressional investigation going on about this during the middle of a war. It caused, you know, serious panic here. You can target the records of key personnel, key military personnel, senior generals. Mess with their records. Throw suspicion on them. Mental health, whatever. Okay. Take out key players. You know, take actions that can revoke security, that, if known, would revoke security clearances. Talked about this earlier, and a small attack on the civilian healthcare system could have these acts of these terrorist types of impact. And it can be regarded fairly as asymmetric warfare. That is, you know, there is no, you know, something like this doesn't violate the Geneva Conventions per se, right? I mean, with it, you know, it's just sort of criminal hacking. Well, it's interesting here, and you can imagine weaker states buying services to cause this kind of effect. So I argue here that the American public is just not prepared for this sort of thing. Yeah, so what are some of the issues in maintaining security here? There are some beliefs about adversaries. Some of this stuff I stole from other people that I've given acknowledgement to. So that some people say that adversaries only care about financial gain. That's the data breach model. And some people say that the adversaries are not technically adept. Well, one, in many of these cases, I think Kevin has noted from a variety of occasions that it doesn't take a lot of skill to hack this stuff, right? This isn't really, it's just getting access to the pathways. And you can do all sorts of interesting things with minimal knowledge. And I think I've demonstrated that there are some, you know, other non-financial motivations for this. There are all of these trade-offs between convenience and security, and we, of course, work in a system, the healthcare guys work in a system which is all oriented towards convenience, right? The convenience of the physician, to a certain extent, the convenience of the patients. Right? It's a very much a, you know, we want to reduce the hassle factor. So, you know, you've all messed with doctors who don't want to be bothered with authentication credentials or serious authentication credentials. So you know you design systems for remote access to care providers, but of course, other guys can get at it too. Okay, security by obscurity, right? There's assumed ignorance of the command protocols. You just assume that people don't know about them. They're available on the manual. You can get the manual from the internet, but you assume that people don't know. Security by assumption. You presume a benign environment. When I raise these kinds of issues to my friends in health, who actually operate large healthcare information systems, they say, "Are you nuts? Nobody would do that." Okay. It's a lot of like the early days of the internet, right, where we presumed a benign environment. And we had lots of, you know, the forensic capabilities in medical devices, not very much. Other issues. There's an applications infrastructure mismatch, right? That the underlying infrastructure changes rapidly, you know, how often you get a security update, that changes the infrastructure, right? But the application on top changes slowly. Right? It's something that you build a healthcare delivery system around. Okay? How you get those two things to be synchronized is a problem. The FBI has said that the biggest vulnerability is the perception of IT healthcare professionals that their current perimeter defenses and compliance strategies were working, even though the data say otherwise. This is from the FBI. And there's a lack of, you know, there's another barrier in this is a lack of what I'm going to call contextualized cybersecurity knowledge, which is the idea that there's insufficient expertise concerning the operational dimension of healthcare. So I'll give you an example here from my personal experience. Okay, in my first discussions with various people about this, I talked about blood types. How'd you like to have your blood type record changed, you know, from A to B or whatever it is, and so on? Well, I have just recently found out that's a terrible example. The example is right in spirit, but the details of it are wrong. Why are they wrong? Because, as I understand the protocol in hospitals now, in fact, they assume that they give you a blood test. If blood type is going to be an issue, they give you a blood test to determine type on the spot. Because turns out that people's blood type changes. There are errors in it. People do cross and matching as a routine procedure all the time. Okay. So, in fact, there are blood type is just sort of a surrogate for about 20 markers or something like that, all of which is desired to have compatibility with. So my example was right in spirit. You can certainly imagine other, but it's, and the allergy to medications is probably a more, is more accurate. And so in the future, what I'm going to do is talk about, you know, changing allergies indications in medications. I'm not going to talk about blood type. But I can imagine that people who actually knew something about the healthcare information, about the healthcare system, about how it's actually performed, you know, in the lab when you go into the ER, okay, they were looking at me like, this guy doesn't know anything. And they would have been right. The spirit would have been right, but the example, the detailed example, would have been wrong. Okay. And I also point out to this the HIMSS survey that said that, which found that the top barrier to mitigating cybersecurity events was the lack of appropriate cybersecurity personnel. Again, the idea that you can just buy the expertise, get people off the street, but people with the appropriate credentials. What are the appropriate credentials? That you know something about cybersecurity. Not that you know something about cybersecurity in healthcare, but know something about cybersecurity. And when you have people who come out of a different culture, there's going to be problems. Okay, so moving forward, what to do here? I think I'm making a good argument here for developing closer working relationships between researchers and practitioners. Right? You got to know what happens on the floor. Follow some care providers around. For those of you who are academics, it's often hard to get acknowledgement for the value of interdisciplinary work. And one of the issues here is that sometimes deep problems in healthcare can be addressed by things that aren't very sophisticated from a CS point of view. That is, people in the medical informatics field and in healthcare more generally have problems that just that if you just took the knowledge that a junior in CS, a third year undergraduate student in CS had, they could make significant progress. Healthcare systems today, the electronic medical records are often monolithic, right? So they're hard to change incrementally. That means security is going to be hard to change too. This middle one about respecting the threat assessments that come from outside the healthcare community, I want to emphasize, okay? Because the healthcare community is not necessarily the best assessor of what the threats are. Okay? And I really want to emphasize that. This is my paranoid national security side coming out. But these are things that I see in down the line. Planning for rapid change in underlying IT infrastructure, we've talked about a little bit about that. There's the tension between convenience and security, which you all know about. There are many talks about this even later today. And the last thing to mention is the idea of reporting channels, developing reporting channels. One of the issues that people have come up with often is that they report things or they develop an antagonistic relationship to the vendors whose products they're screwing with. Okay, so it would be it's helpful if you can do it to develop agreements with these people to help them, so both sides have to be involved in this. They have to want to help, but you have to be respectful of their business interests too. Okay, and developing those reporting channels goes a long way to smoothing things out. Anyway, so that's it. If you want these slides, I'm happy to email them. Send them to send me a note, and I'll send you these slides. This is the first sort of large scale public presentation that I've made of this, and I'd really like to start a conversation among people about the idea that the threat has got to go beyond data breach, okay? And it's got to go beyond medical devices. Important as those things are, okay, it has to go a lot farther than that. And I see this as a national security threat that's just sort of looming out there that I would like to start getting people to start paying more attention to. Anyway, with that, I will entertain discussion look forward to any comments you might have. So. Well, it's an interesting question. I, you know, if you were to propose less reliance on records, on electronic records for sensitive conditions, mental health, sexually transmitted disease, whatever. Okay, if you could imagine that, you get two reactions. When I've gone down this path, physicians complain, I need the complete record. If I'm going to provide good professional responsibility, I need the complete record. I need to know everything that's going on. Okay? I have to treat the whole person. I can't treat just one part of them. Okay? Stomach issues have to deal with mental health issues, for example. You know, I remember that very well from my graduate years when I was having stomach pains and a guy in the mental health department said, no, I've seen this many times before. What he gave me was Valium to calm down. I was preparing for my orals. and it worked. It was brilliant. I mean, it cured my stomach problems. Valium cured my stomach problems. So the doc will not want that. And the second thing is that, you're talking about resegregating and so on, and that's just... I haven't heard anybody who thinks that that's politically viable. So I think that we're going down this path, and the question is, we can go down it more securely or less securely, and if I have a choice, I vote for more securely. Anyway, other thoughts? Yeah. Okay, so there would be. It would be nice to have an innovation in security that actually helped business process. That in itself would be something worthy of writing up, just to demonstrate the possibility. Jim.
No.
I think that's really the lesson that I want to do here, to underscore here, that the threats are not just financial. They're not just data breach. They're all kinds of other things that people just don't seem to me to be on the radar of healthcare IT professionals and researchers. That's why I titled this talk about an expanding threat.
David. A lot of your moving forward comments were around that theme of we need to be more cognizant of the broader range of threats. The IT staff need to be more careful in deploying secure solutions and so forth. But are there also some solutions that still need to be developed? Are there problems beyond just improving the operational security, for example, left to researchers?
No doubt there are. So the question is, are there problems that need real research to be done? That's the way I in security. And there's a, you know, what I follow a lot of computer security developments through, you know, the NSF funds, lots of people fund and so on, and people say that it's new, it's different, and so these are new mechanisms being developed. And often when I look at it, it turns out that there are concepts and techniques and so on that were all multics based, right? If people would just go back and read the original papers of multics, you'd learn a lot about what people are inventing now or reinventing now. So there's a sense in which, I certainly am an advocate of research in CS to advance the state of the art, the technological state of the art for security, absolutely. But I also think that there's a vast underutilization of what's already known for reasons like convenience. Okay, I mean I was being sarcastic, but it was also a true statement. You know that I really would like to see some security innovation that helped business processes that didn't get in the way. Okay? The trade-off between security and convenience seems to me. You can understand why it comes about. You can, you know, you all have your one-liner about why, about the story that happens and about why it happens and so on. But I don't know how to break that. That to me is where the interesting research is in making the stuff usable. In fact, you know, you talk about quote usable security now. Why should the adjective usable now be associated with security? You mean before it wasn't usable? Well, in practice, it wasn't. And so now we're realizing that usable security really is a research frontier, and it's just as hard, not harder, than just doing advancing the security, quote, the security itself, unquote. Because, of course, the best security has to be used. Interesting question. I think that they do not apply, at least in the difference between the national security context of what you just described, they don't apply because what the FBI is worried about is that nobody but the bad guy nobody but the individual in question has access. Everybody will grant that somebody, for their health records, that somebody else has to have access to it. Everybody will grant that. Okay. And if everybody's willing to grant that, then it's just a question of how many others. Okay. So the difference here is either zero or non-zero. And I think, from what I can tell, the security arguments against the FBI's exceptional access requirements is that you're trying to implement a non-zero access outside the individual. Okay, you have some access outside that's not under the individual's control. In healthcare, I think we're already willing to grant that there's going to be, that it's going to be at least one, your care provider. And if it's going to be one, then the difference between one and two. Yeah. I guess the answer is, let me think about that some more. It's an interesting question. I haven't been asked that question before. I will think about it some more.
I think we keep moving along. Thanks to Dr. Lin, and thanks for
okay.
The